This is, I guess, we're trying to implement a vision, which is once we have optimal available technology, what additional steps do we have to take to make sure that our elections can be trusted? A lot of the past discussion in this conference has been about election technology and transparency and trust and security, but even if you have paper ballot systems, that's not the answer to a complete answer to the problem. You have to have the right procedures in place, and you have to have thought through why the results of the election can be trusted even with that technology. So that's the question we're trying to address in this talk. So we did a study in Marin County of a threat evaluation methodology that we're developing. So our primary interest is how do we prevent undetected fraud? So if there is fraud in an election, how do we maximize the chance that it will actually be detected? We believe this is a problem because elections are extremely attractive targets for fraud. And right now, the primary responsibility in the U.S. for prevention or detection of fraud rests with local election officials. So their procedures are actually the most important thing for making sure our elections are trustworthy. So the scope of this talk, there are lots of problems with elections that we can address. The scope of this talk is really rather narrowly focused, because it was still a very big job after doing that, on attempts to steal an election without being detected. And so we're concerned with whether it's possible to inject fraudulent ballots into the system somehow, or whether the results can be changed after ballots are cast somehow to change the outcome of the election. There are lots of things we did not consider, sort of blatant in-your-face, broad daylight election fraud that everybody knows is happening, mistakes, breakdowns, et cetera, that are honest, deniable attacks that are detected, vote suppression, campaign finance, et cetera, et cetera. We didn't take that on. That doesn't mean they're not problems. It just means that we needed to limit our focus to get the job done. So really, procedures are the most important part of the problem once you have the technology problem solved. And so even the best election technology cannot prevent fraud. And in my opinion, Marin is using about the best available technology we have, which is precinct count optical scan in a state, California, that requires random manual audits in every county. But we still need optimal procedures. And before going into this, we were very concerned with questions of physical security for ballots and auditing procedures, and particularly public observation of auditing procedures. So the problem is that even with optimal technology, achieving an acceptable level of security is really highly non-trivial, and we can argue about what's an acceptable level of security, and I will use my semi-undefined meaning for that. So we believe an approach to this is to solving the problem is to do systematic threat evaluation. So over time, we'd like to develop a methodology where people can go into a local jurisdiction and evaluate their procedures and try to come back with an answer of how secure or how trustworthy are the elections in that procedure. And right now, there really isn't a way to do this. So one of the key questions is that this might be able to answer is how should scarce resources be allocated? There's a certain amount of time, money, and public attention available to deal with problems. And so should we be focusing on voter ID in elections, or should we be focusing on physical security of the ballots or the audit processes? And right now, probably there's more debate going on about voter ID than about these other problems. But in order to come up with a sort of rational and objective answer to the question whether to where to focus our efforts on election trustworthiness, we really need some way of quantitatively comparing threats, countermeasures, et cetera. So the answer is, which questions should we address, which threats should we address first, and how much should we pay, what sort of resources should we devote to those threats? So this helps with larger policy debates, such as, should we have electronic voting machines, should we have internet voting, as well as the question of optimizing procedures in local jurisdictions, which is what we're really concerned with here. But we don't really know how to do it. So our proposed solution is to have a systematic quantitative threat modeling methodology for the local level. We, over several years, have developed a tool called AttackDog, which uses generalized attack trees, which I'll talk about only a little bit later because it's not the main point of the talk, although the paper does discuss this in more detail. The major challenge after working on this for several years has been, how do we actually make this feasible? So how can you go into a jurisdiction and actually do a reasonable threat evaluation with finite amounts of effort? It turns out to be a lot harder than I would have initially believed. And so the solution we believe that is at least a start to this is to have a generic and reusable threat model that we can tailor to a particular jurisdiction. So the notion is that you know basically what the issues are in doing secure, trustworthy elections, and you have worked out in advance most of the possible attacks and countermeasures that you expect to be used. And you go into a jurisdiction, observe their local procedures and their system, and tune your model to apply to that jurisdiction. And so in that way, by reusing the knowledge that's been acquired over time, in the future, by doing this in many different jurisdictions, we hope we can make it reasonably easy to do a threat evaluation in a particular in the next jurisdiction. So we tested this idea in Marin County, California, in the November 2010 general election. So if you have a few days, I'd urge you to go visit Marin County. Like many places in the area, it's very beautiful. So you just drive across the Golden Gate Bridge and you're there. It has a population of 242,000 some, 120,000 voters or 120,000 votes cast in a typical election, as I recall the exact numbers in the paper. It's a medium-sized California county. The most important thing about it, besides it was close to here, is that it has extremely helpful and cooperative election officials. Elaine Genold, in particular, the election director, was absolutely crucial to being able to conduct this study, and that's why we actually did it there. Thanks. It uses a precinct count optical scan voting system. Almost all counties in California use optical scan of some kind. It, like other counties in California, uses central count optical scan for absentee votes, and there are many, many absentee votes cast in California because it's sort of no-fault absentee voting. So my co-authors, Eric Lazarus and Joe Hall, did the actual studying of the county and observed the procedures. So this is, this screenshot is showing a piece of attack dog. The attack trees we're using, I won't describe in great detail, but it's essentially an and/or tree. So there's a top-level goal. This doesn't show the top-level goal, which is basically, I forget exactly what it is, but it's steal the election, essentially, for the attacker. And then the attacker has to meet various sub-goals. So an AND node means that there are several sub-goals that have to be met, that all have to be met, in order to satisfy the attacker's the goal above that. An OR node means that there are several different ways to attack the election, or several different routes, and that the attacker can use any one of them. And so by putting this tree together, which is quite large, we can then go through and systematically enumerate all the combinations of individual attack steps that would be adequate to achieve the top-level goal, which is stealing the election. And then for each of those attacks, combinations of attack steps, we can run an arbitrary code over it to compute an arbitrary value in the computer that represents the cost of the attack. Those are the capabilities of the system. Now, for this particular study, we did a particular cost that I'll talk about later, but I want to distinguish between the capabilities of the system, which is extremely broad and flexible, versus what how we chose to use it in this particular study, which I'll get into more detail later. So one of the key ideas in attack dog was to make threat models reusable. And that's discussed in more detail in the paper, but I'll mention some of the features. So the cost of computation, as I mentioned, is extremely flexible. So we basically can consider a cost to be an arbitrary data type. It could be a number, could be a probability for a risk or something like that, or it could be a record with several different fields representing different costs that we've computed. And we can compute these with arbitrary functions that just add up the costs of the individual steps. And so one of the things we do here in this particular study is that we are looking at different kinds of people, and we consider the possibility that one person might be able to do several different attack steps. And so our cost function is a little bit sophisticated because it doesn't just add up the number of people involved in the attack. It allows for the possibility that some people can do several different things in the attack. One of the most important features for making our threat models reusable is that we have a collection of parameters. Our functions are actually written in the R statistical programming language, And we have a set of definitions of variables that are used in computing those functions that are provided ahead of time, something called the defense domain. Those variables are used in the cost formulas for numbers like how many precincts do we have, how many voters do we have, et cetera. And in addition, we have a generic tree where by setting parameters, we have functions defined in that tree that can rip out whole subtrees if they happen to be irrelevant for the particular election. And so that way, we can have a generic tree that has certain kinds of attacks that may be technology dependent or certain types of countermeasures that may be choices of the individual jurisdiction. And we can put all of that stuff in the tree, and then by just setting a few variables, we can say whether those subtrees are actually active. And if they're not active, they disappear entirely from the tree and don't apply in the jurisdiction. So this makes it very easy to reuse a generic threat model, which is what we're studying in this particular case. So the metric we use, we debated this a lot. In fact, this was used in the Brennan Sitter report in 2003, and we've stuck with it since then, is attack team size. So this is very controversial. I expect that there will be questions about attack team size, because there always are. But we've been sticking to it. And the basic concept is that if you look at the resources that the motivation of people who'd want to steal an election, even local elections are worth a lot of money. So controlling a local government in California is worth serious bucks, and other things too. You know, power is perhaps an independent motivation besides money. And so we look at, you know, what is the really the thing that somebody attacking an election would really want to avoid? And we think what that is detection. So Ben Franklin said three people may keep a secret if two of them are dead. So the more people you have involved in an effort, knowingly involved in an effort to steal an election, the more likely it is that the election theft will be discovered. That means that people will be subject to punishment, and also that, you know, the plot will be foiled and their efforts will have been wasted. So we think that's the most important metric if you're talking about stealing elections without being detected. The other features of this, it appeals to me because it has the right level of granularity. It's very easy when you're debating something like this to try to come up with really complex metrics where you combine dollars and probabilities and this and that. But most of these numbers are not based on any kind of empirical history where you can go back and look at past elections and make accurate computations about the resources necessary to create various frauds. We're operating in a state of limited knowledge because we don't really know how much undetected election fraud is going on or has even been successful. And so it's difficult to estimate these things accurately. We want a quantitative measure, but I think it's really deceptive, leads to a lot of arguments, and is very misleading to try to come up with a more accurate measure than is actually feasible, or a more precise measure than is feasible. So we think that attack team size is something where you can reasonably debate, sometimes in a heated manner, how many people need to be involved in something, but you can kind of get a handle on it. And then you come back with a number that says, well, you know, you have an attack team size of 2 plus or minus, you know, 1, or maybe the number is between 1 and 10, but that gives you a feel for the security of the system. And that, if you're comparing an attack team size of 100 of 10 versus an attack team size of 500, it gives you a feeling about which threats are more important to attack to deal with. So we developed a reusable threat model for this that we've actually been working on for over 4 years. And it involves, the motivation has been different at different times. At some point, it's been just general policy questions about electronic voting versus other ways of conducting elections to try to get a handle on security of technology. But and in some cases, it's been looking at particular jurisdictions and trying to get a handle on what the security issues are in the procedures. But the Marin County study that I'll be talking about here is the one where we really committed to doing a detailed study of a particular jurisdiction and taking it to completion. So we start with this very general threat model that we developed over a period of years. We then entered Marin County and we learned about how they do elections. So that involved looking at California election law, talking to the election officials running the at various levels of the hierarchy in Marin County, and actually observing the election, because you really can't tell how elections work until you watch them. And observing the procedures after the election, such as the post-election office audit in California, which involves a manual hand count of randomly chosen jurisdictions. So then what we imagine is, as the methodology, is we take the generic model, we set the parameters as appropriate for the size of election, number of precincts, et cetera, and then, hopefully not very much, we may have to make some changes to the model because of things we didn't anticipate that are happening in the particular jurisdiction. So we're looking at all this with an eye to how many changes do we have to make and how hard is it going to be, what's the incremental cost in entering each jurisdiction in doing the threat analysis, given that you have this generic model. So the paper goes into this in more detail, but I'll talk a little bit about the adaptations we had to do to the model for Marin County. So we had to estimate the number of voters and polling places. That was based on historical data. Going in, you know, once you get close enough to the election, you know how much many polling places they're actually going to have. We estimate the number of poll workers per polling place. There are, I think it's manned, I should have known this, but I think the number is at least four by California law. But typically in polling places in California, they have 4 to 6. Per precinct, they'll have 4 to 6 poll workers. And then some qualitative measures, which were a bit controversial even among the co-authors and also with the reviewers, about the stringency of tamper evidence measures and audit procedures, since we were worried about physical security and about audits, and also assumption about the elections, and these were especially controversial. What kind of margin of victory did we expect or do we care about? What are the number of votes that can be stolen in a precinct without it being totally obvious and that sort of thing? So you can look at the paper to see that in more detail. The reason I'm talking about this is to get a grip on the number of parameters we had to set, the amount of work required to tailor the model. And the number is about 12, as I recall. Okay, and then what changes do we have to make in the model for things we didn't anticipate? There's actually basically one significant change, which is that in Marin County, ballots aren't just transported to the center where they're stored, the ballot storage facility. They're transported by pairs of poll workers to drop-off points where their bunches of boxes are collected into trucks and transported onto the ballot storage facility. So for a period of time, there are small teams of people in these trucks who have access to relatively large numbers of ballots, and that affected our analysis. So we had to make some small changes to deal with that. Okay, one of the points we observed very quickly is that security, we didn't need to think about computer security because computer security measures are essentially useless for increasing the attack team size. I'm being deliberately controversial here, but this has been a pet peeve of mine that so much work goes into penetration analysis. It's in fact brilliant work, but after having done every single time that somebody tries to attack an electronic voting machine, they completely devastate the thing. I think the point has been proved. We do not know how to secure this technology. We didn't even bother to look at it in Marin County because we knew the attack team size was one. We can debate this in the questions after the talk, but we chose to devote our efforts to other issues, especially since California has audits and Marin County has paper trails. We decided that that was the defense mechanism that we had to look at most carefully. So in order to increase attack team size, we need software independence. And in California, that means we're dependent on manual hand counts of randomly selected precincts. So we came up with a list of attacks. It's not comprehensive, but things that we're worried about or that we thought were interesting. And one of them is the obvious one that people in this community worry about, which is malware in the machines. And so making the voting machines cheat using malware, well, we have this vast tree that we've already put in our attack trees for every way a subset of the ways we could think of to do this that we've developed over time. We were able to just recycle that because there have been so many debates about electronic voting. We had it sitting there and ready to go. So the steps involved writing malware, inserting malware, evading testing the machines, et cetera, all of that. There are hundreds of ways of doing it. It involves an attack team size of one. One person who's an insider or an outsider, as many people have shown, can usually do this. But in California, you have to also defeat the manual auditing process. So that's what we focused on. And so there are various ways we think of doing that. We could tamper with the paper ballots during transportation or storage. We thought in Marin County that possibly one additional outsider, in addition to the person who has to hack the computers, could, with significant effort, alter a large enough number of ballots to change. If they're changed, the ballots are changed consistently with the electronic totals to get past the ballot, the audit, and tell a consistent story about what supposedly happened in the election that's false, supporting a fraud. And there's a possibility of insider attacks on the audit process. Audit processes has to be done very carefully. And for example, the random selection of precincts needs to be done in a public way, but you have to have observers present watching this process. There weren't enough observers present in Marin County in this particular election. And you have to, when people actually do the hand counts, you have to compare that with committed totals. And in Marin County, there was one person who was responsible for comparing the committed totals with the hand counts. And had that insider chosen to support an election fraud, he or she could have done that. So there's an attack team size of two for this kind of attack. Another kind of attack that we thought might be effective in Marin County was vote-by-mail attack. There's an obvious attack, which is to have an insider steal ballots or discard ballots. There's a less obvious attack, which we call a stolen registration attack. Since I'm running short of time, I'll ask you to read the paper. But the basic idea is that somebody registers a bunch of voters who are legal voters but never vote and have never been registered and casts absentee ballots in their name. The hardest part about that is obtaining the blank absentee ballots. We think that can be done with some effort by a small team. We also, since we have a flexibility ability, we have a flexible ability to compute attack team, to compute cost metrics, we decided to try an alternative cost metrics where insiders were considered more costly than outsiders. So one insider is worth 10 outsiders. It's easy to do in the system. It changes the results a little bit, but we still had small attack team sizes. So our conclusions are that threat evaluation with reusable threat models might be practical based on the results of this experiment, that even with paper ballot systems and audit requirements, security is a tough problem, and particular points of worry are physical security of the ballots and the sensitivity of auditing to procedural details. We consider this study a first step that we hope people will follow up on, not a complete solution at this point. In the future, there are obvious possibilities for improvements to tools, more efficient evaluation under multiple different kinds of assumptions, better summarization of possible attacks to make the results of these analysis easier to interpret, general productization issues with the tool. And we think really making the problem simpler would be very important. So simplified elections would be great. Don't see great prospects for that in the United States, but it would be a wonderful thing, as I'm sure many election officials would agree. Standardized security model for elections, something where you open up the box, it tells you how to do election security, and you go do it, would make evaluation much easier as well as making the security much easier. So it's not a new adventure with every single jurisdiction. And ballot level auditing would make public observation much more easy, and that segues into the next talk. Good. So at that point, I will stop and take any questions you may have in our remaining time.
Thank you, David. Can our next speaker please set up?
So I tried to use the supplemental information link in the paper a couple times, and it didn't work.
So I need to fix that.
Okay, and if I were, forgetting how much knowledge I have, if I were to access that page, would it show me the tool so that I could reuse it?
We will release the tool publicly. Shortly. It's not there on the supplemental information link. That is documents which are automatically generated by the tool that explain the attack trees in excruciating detail.
Okay. Will you release it on that same page?
We'll do something reasonable, and if we don't, please send me mail. I respond to nagging eventually.
Thanks.
But it's our intention to release everything.
Philip Stark from UC Berkeley. I just want to question one of the assumptions regarding audits and how many people it takes to defeat them. And my current view is that in California, the audit doesn't need to be defeated. It's self-defeating.
Tack team size of zero.
Basically, yeah, that it has a very low chance of finding any problems even if the outcome is wrong. And moreover, there's no requirement that even if you find a problem, you do anything about it. Other than say, you found some error in the report. So there's no sort of escalation provision. So somebody could essentially with impunity, you know, do whatever they want. The audit isn't necessarily going to then rectify anything. But you know, there's hope. We're changing the laws.
I think you may be overstating the case for countywide elections, certainly in a place like Marin, depending on, you know, what the probability of detection is. So
The probability of
this is something we can discuss in more detail later, but for the sake of the audience.
It's going to depend on the margin, among other things. But especially if you have a narrow margin, there can be a very large chance that the 1% audit won't find even a single discrepancy in the precinct level counts, even if the outcome of the contest is wrong. If you pack the error into a small number of precincts, it can be enough to alter the outcome, and you still have a small
So this will depend. I'm not going to argue with you because I'll lose, but it may depend on the assumption of margin of error, and that is something that's also. I'm going to just change the topic slightly and say that the assumptions about margin of victory that we made in the paper were fairly controversial between co-authors and reviewers. The one thing I can say about it is it's more or less monotonic. So as you change as you lower the margin of victory, it doesn't change the relative attack team sizes for the different attacks that much. So it still allows you to allocate your resources. But it may, once you get a small margin of error, it may look hopeless with current audit procedures. Margin of victory, I'm sorry. Thank you.
And I think we only have time for one more question, I'm sorry. And could our next speaker please come up?
Good morning. Ana Maria Quevedo, undergraduate student conducting research under Dr. Wagner this summer. I just want to ask, if there is a discrepancy when they conduct the audit, they have more or less ballots, or they have different counts, what do they do in that case? It's concerning, you know, that there might be a possibility for an attack. I'm just interested to know what would they do in that case.
So I guess where we stopped here was if the attack is detected, right? And the question of what legal remedies to exist in California, I don't know. And more broadly in the United States, I am quite unhappy with the redress that's available in cases where elections have been demonstrated to be flawed or probably flawed. So I think it is a general problem. We're not addressing it in this study, and you know, I'd like to see it discussed and solved, but other than being unhappy about it, I'm not going to go into more detail. Well, yeah, so in Humboldt, they were able to get to the bottom of it and solve it and didn't become an issue where the outcome of the election was really questioned. But in a case like the Sarasota, Florida case, I don't really believe that, first of all, I believe the outcome of the election was wrong relative to the intent of the voters. And second, I don't know that the problem was actually gotten to the bottom of. And so that sort of situation makes me unhappy. So
thank you.